πιάτσα να κάνει, είναι από τη
ζωή. Και είναι the same apologies yesterday, Ms. Fast Salt, who was attending the IEC conference in Jerusalem. Mr. Hugh Lewis, who was attending to Park Business, according to the his apology. So Mantashi is still medically Mantashi. McPherson is still as part of business, Israel is attending the PCM Energy, and Mr. Juan Moore is attending to Pan African Park.
Can we move on the adoption of the agenda, members? Correno stolen by Williams. Thank you.
I said on science and technology, so I will just be out once this morning just to record my presence there. But due to the two of us sitting here and no other parties attending, maybe we can try to trying to win some time this morning. But I will set up the agenda.
Yes, then. Okay. Yes, I think that would be possible. Okay. We will hand over to the department, to SIPS for the briefing.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to present the CIDC annual report. At first quarter, I will second the Honourable Committee members' views. I will go through it as quickly as possible. We have quite a lengthy presentation, Honourable Chair. It's mainly for the committee members' information sharing. I won't go through every single slide. It's the fact that I will try and deal with the salient and higher points regarding achievements and challenges. And when we come to, for example, slides on the matrices, I won't go through every single aspect of the matrix. I will give an overall view of where we're at as far as that is concerned, and thereafter we'll move along quite swiftly. Before I start, Honourable Chair, I would like to introduce my delegation. To my near right, I have our acting CFO, Ms. Fundi Malaza. She will assist me with the presentation during the financial aspects of the annual report in the first quarter. And next to her, we have our Chief Strategy Executive, Mr. Mpili Dikwana, who will also assist as far as questions and issues might be posed. As I said, Honourable Chair, I believe the presentation is quite lengthy. It is quite full of information, so I will try and keep it as brief as possible and keep to the points that are of interest. I'll try and highlight some our performance issues in the CIPC, the challenges that we face, the achievements we've met over the year and the first quarter, and my CFO, as I said, will do the financials. The first aspect, Chair, is that when we look at the issues around the indicators on the 9-month financial performance, we, and I'll also repeat some of the points, is that you will see that on many of the actual achievements, there has been a reduction as far as the percentage achievements, mainly because we're using the year in the prison register system mainly, not in the ID system or in the court server system, to build a new system and a new way of working. We try to eliminate the issue of paper and to introduce a paperless environment. We also introduce something called a new indexing system and scan to email. So it's all part of our automation and electronic strategy in the CIPC in order for us to deal with the applications quicker and to have quicker service delivery standards and turnaround times. So during the course of the year, we had a bit of system challenges as far as trying to adopt and change the system and the new way of working in the organization. Firstly, from the fact that we built the system in-house, called an indexing automation system, but the staff has utilized the use of images for it to process. So when you see actual achievements on many of the areas in the business register and the non-attainment of many of them, it's because of trying to inculcate that culture in the organization as well as the system challenges of it being in-house. We use aspect of dual screen functionality, and some of the members might be familiar with that aspect during your visit to the CIPC. I think there was a walkout to see how the new way is, but that was very early days. We tried to get that as far as the basis for moving forward, and when we get to the first quarter, we can see the benefits flowing through from the hard work that was done last year. So if I skip over some of the matrices as far as that is concerned, one of the members, wherever you see an actual achievement that has not been met fully in terms of the plan targets, most of the issues regarding that is around the system challenge of changing the scan to image and the poor image solution intensely in the organization, and therefore that pose some processing challenges for staff. Other members, you'll see that in areas that were not affected by the actual change in system and the new way of working, for example, in the intellectual property area, which is strategic goal number 1 and 1.2, you will see that there's been attainment of the actual achievements in those areas because of the fact that they were not exposed to the additional functionality that was being developed. They were using the system that was already in there, and therefore they continue to maintain a very good turnaround times and service delivery standards in those particular areas. So those areas have attained the targets that were set as per the APP. Chairperson, in the interest of time, I think I've explained the outline of exactly what areas were not achieved as far as that is concerned in the APP and the matrices. I will then move over to the actual performances of the other various areas in detail and to explain the movements of the organization going forward as far as strategy and the automation strategy is concerned. If one moves to the issue of the online transactions, and one can see going back to 2013, 2014 year, all the way to where we are today, there has been an increase as far as the utilization of online transactions, which speaks to the way the organization has managed to move our industry and move our clients in the way that the organization is moving as far as automation is concerned. In every area that we portrayed, there has been a gradual successful movement and a gradual uptake in the utilization of it, which also speaks to some of the stability issues that we see flowing through as far as our IT system is concerned. Other members will know that the CIPC for many years has been playing with legacy systems way back to what was the old Cipro days, but as part of the strategy and the movement from Cipro to CIPC, there has been a lot of hard work that has been used in order for us to deal with the legacy system issues, the infrastructural stability and IT system issues, in order for us to bring organization into a more automated environment. And this has been shown by the online transaction utilization and usage, which means that our clients feel the ability and therefore use the system far more as far as that is concerned. Also, when it looks at the issue of our online transaction, it also speaks to our access strategy, whereby we want to roll out our services nationwide and not only utilize the far reach so that we are by posting and manually presenting documents and registration documents to us, and therefore our online transaction strategy as well as our access strategy speaks to this as a mainline application, and therefore we see the usage improving, and therefore it speaks to the access strategy working as far as I've tried to make our services fully nationwide. When I took the issue of the access strategy and how we are fully rolling it out, we have a certain quarters in that we have been focusing our attention on in order for us to roll this out. The first one is the self-service terminal, which I'm sure many of the members present have visited the first time it was rolled out in Pretoria, when we decided to move the front office of the CIPC away from the campus in order to take it to where our clients were and therefore have self-service centers being set up countrywide. The first one was set up in Pretoria. We have one set up in Johannesburg. We have one set up in Cape Town, which will soon be moving from its current office to just across the road, very, very close to where it currently is, and we're in the process of setting it up, and it should be fully operational in November. We have one in Fergana. I will also, going forward, speak to the others that we will be rolling out in the next few months in order for us to take our services nationwide. It is also known that we collaborate a lot as an entity, and we try to be innovative in that space. And as far as that is concerned, we collaborate with banks to offer an integrated service of company registration together with bank opening registration, because as we know that when one person registers a company, the first place they're going to visit is either their accountant or lawyer, and next they're going to visit the bank. So if we can have that in-house and work on that, it certainly is a plus as far as that is concerned. We've worked F&B into the loop many, many years, probably about 2 years, 2.5 years now, and I'm pleased to announce that Standard Bank has now come on board, and therefore clients and the public can walk into a Standard Bank branch and register a company through their portal together with bank account registration. The other banks that are progressing fairly well, and we should have some traction in coming on board in possibly the next 3 months, is Nedbank, as well as Absa, which Absa should be fairly short because they have been in the testing phase for a couple of weeks now. We've also done what we call a large business service by not only focusing on small entities in the SME market, we also want to focus on other client base, which are large entities, which are listed and listed entities and subsidiaries. And in this regard, we open up a pilot office in the Johannesburg Securities Exchange that look after this particular market. It is going extremely well. I get a lot of positive feedback from the JHC as far as this is concerned. And we even thinking of extending the services. It's currently one way to expedite the service to larger companies, but there is a real need in the course for rising services because our staff are better off providing, and therefore it's seen as an end to the larger type of entities and their subsidiaries going forward. Honourable members, the next slide is an indication of the company registration volumes over the period. You can see that we're probably peaking between the 240,000 and 230,000 mark, somewhere there. There has been a slight decline. It could be economic reasons, it could be the state of the economy. Not a significant drop as far as year on year, as you can see from last year, but basically we seem to be stabilizing somewhat as far as the indication of non-year registrations is concerned. We had 236,000 registrations in the 2014-2015 financial year. Other registrations that we do at CIPC is in the cooperative space. One again is a similar type of indication where there has been a slight decrease or decline in the amount of registrations. We did see a sharp increase from the 2011 year, basically because of the DTI incentive schemes, as well as the cooperative unit that is within the DTI that is now moved to the Small Business Development Agency, and therefore there's a lot of work being done in the cooperative space in order to try and stabilize the amount as well as the governance within cooperative registrations. So we do see a stabilizing item between the 20,000 and 21,000 mark, and we see that trend lasting for the next couple of years as far as the number of registrations in the cooperative space is concerned. Honourable members, I do know that in the next probably 2 weeks, I will get back in Parliament to present on the business risk report that the CIPC has done with the University of Victoria. But this is just the statistics of the year regarding business review, and to see that as a policy and as an indication of the activity in business risk space, there has been also an averaging out of the 400 mark as far as that is concerned. This to us is an indication that it is working. There is a lot of work that still needs to be done as far as business issues are concerned, especially in the business issues practitioner space and the regulating of them. We as CIPC are currently in the process of getting up a business issue forum to bring business issue practitioners, banks, as well as academics into one room in order to discuss how do we take this policy and this new innovation and mandate in the company going forward, because it's going to be a 5-year mark that we deal with us, and therefore we want to see how it's been working. It will be fully discussed in the next few weeks when I present once again, but also just to say that we see that the work and the turnaround times as far as business rescue registration in the CIPC is concerned is one way it is efficient, also one way the business rescue practitioners are put to be seen as efficient. We do it in less than 5 days, which is allowed by the Act, and therefore we have the appointment done as far as the continuation of the business rescue processes when they continue. I did mention that as far as the IT registrations, and we do registration of trademarks, patents and designs, and copyrights and forms, it is one way, it is official registrations. We never seem to have backlogs in these areas. It is one way the CIPC timelessly deals with applications and deals with the registrations going forward. Just to say that as far as trademarks is concerned, South Africa as a country, and especially the office of CIPC, we are looking to proceed to what is called the Madrid Protocol, which is an international registration process for trademarks. In the next few years, we are currently engaged with WIPO in this area. My trademark manager will be meeting them in the next couple of weeks in order to see how we deal with the latest changes as per IP policy in order for us to accede to this particular protocol. We are in discussion with the CERDV in the trademarks, and we should be reporting back in the next couple of months as how far we will be engaging as far as seeing it is concerned. When it comes to the issue of the registrations, we did 35,000 plus in the last financial year, and it is possibly the trend that has been following through for the last couple of years as far as trademark applications and trademark registrations is concerned. In the patents and designs area, you can see there is one area that, as far as TUS is concerned, there was an increase as far as applications. We received 10,000 plus in the 14-15 year. Slight decline in times. But as far as patents is also, we have a positive system and here we are very efficient as far as the applications and also as far as dealing with any queries that might arise in the patent area. Just to say that as a office, we are also in the patent area, we are also gearing up towards substantive examinations of patents as per the IP policy. We are discussing with the DGI regarding how we take the process forward. In the last few weeks, we have advertised for patent examiner positions. We've received numerous CVs in the area, and we are moving swiftly along in the recruitment of patent examiners. We are also in discussions with officers, not only in the BRICS group, but beyond, in order for us to deal with training of these patent examiners, and we should be receiving results fairly quickly as far as a training program is in place, in order as a country to move substantive examination of patents along, which is contained within the IP policy. Copyright in homes, which is also in the IP space, it is the only area of copyright for which we register as a country, showed a bit of a decrease. We, as a strategy, have started to focus a lot of our attention in the heads of industry space, including the copyright in homes. Over the years, you know that we have produced a film on a short film on film registration copyright. We are playing very actively the role of enforcement of infringement of copyrights. And knowing that just today that my team is dealing with the Deputy Minister is there tomorrow, in order for us to play a more meaningful role as far as the enforcement of copyright and counterfeiting concern, especially in the film, the music industry, and the creative arts. So it is a steady decline as far as the film is concerned. The African country is producing much more films, which means that we can do more in the space in order to encourage registration of films, and therefore we're going out in awareness campaigns to try and increase the numbers and make people aware of their rights as far as the registration is concerned. When we move on to the ethical investigations and the company investigations, the members will know that CIPC, in terms of the New Companies Act, mandate has changed from being a pure administrative company law to a regulator of company law and enforce and investigate. So we play quite a large role as far as investigations is concerned. As you can see from the numbers, month on month we see multiple complaints. It is quite timelessly dealt with in terms of our turnaround times. We do not seem to have major backlog in this area. It is the maintenance of a manual that has been developed, an investigation manual that has been developed in-house when investigators follow through with their productivity steps as well as concluding because they understand the importance of this work. It is a close connection between ourselves and our sister body, the Companies Tribunal, when we want to pass on other information to other regulators. So we play quite a meaningful role in the investigation phase to ensure that cases are concluded timelessly. The following slide speaks also to our relationship with professional bodies, accounting professional bodies in what is called enforceable in data analysis. It is another area that was introduced in the New Companies Act, whereby if an accountant or auditor picks up an irregularity during the course of assurance provision engagement, he has a duty to report same to the regulator or other regulators, one of them being CIPC, and we receive the majority of our enforceable irregularities during the audits of companies from the independent regulation group of auditors or IRGA, and therefore we continuously deal with them. We have a relationship as far as the going is concerned. There is a movement of data between two entities, and the issues of how their reports are dealt with are fully implemented in the culture of the organization, as well as the feedback that is given to the IRGA when we deal with enforceable irregularities in that space. The next slide is just an indication of the type of complaints that we receive. Over the period, you will see that the majority of them is in the annual financial statement space, the preparation of some, the conclusion of some timelessly as per the law, and therefore it gives us an indication of what we should focus on as an entity going forward as part of our education and our business campaigns, as well as the issue of how we deal with the governance within companies, because financial statements are the indicator of how companies are run. And therefore, if you see the type of complaints received, you will see it's mainly in the area of financial management, and therefore we must do more work in that space in order for us to increase the type of business as well as the governance in those companies. Compliance processes is the end stage. It is where we have completed an investigation. It is what we send to companies when they have not dealt with the complaints fully. it is a collective behavior, it's a response to what we receive either from reports of an irregularity or from a complaint which we see through various sources. And as you can see from it, there is a prototype which is 40-15, my apologies, honorable members, in terms of 160 compliance notices being issued in the financial year. Compliance notices is something which we see taking off. It is a very important tool that was introduced in the Companies Act. We see companies paying more regard and more due diligence to it when they're receiving it, because then we issue something called compliance certificates, and we're seeing an increase in the number of compliance certificates that we are providing to companies, showing that they're compliant with the notices and the aggressive behavior is being implemented. Also, this is the heart of our regulated capacity and moving the organization fully in the regulation space into one of an attainable regulator. Honourable members, one role that we take very seriously, and a company that was, and a new type of company that was introduced in the new company, that is the one of the state-owned company. We do market tests of this particular sector. I'm sure the members will be aware that there has been quite a few reports and negative media reports regarding sector companies and governance in the running of them over the last year or two. We have an entity taken on the role to look at how we can get involved in increasing the governance levels. We have looked at how we can test the governance. We can look at how they deal with the issues of Companies Act and the areas of the companies that require their attention. We have sent them surveys. We have received responses from numerous state-owned companies. And we're also getting involved in how we look at taking some of these matters to court. In the last year, for example, we have sent compliance notices to Telkom where they have an issue of the CEO and the provision of a loan to one of the directors. We managed to get an order and we managed to get the CEO attending a governance course, which was quite successful because we received a compliance certificate thereafter. We're also now recently dealing with the issue of NASA, which is the nuclear regulator and some of their governance issues. So we're playing a more meaningful role as far as that is concerned. I've met the Minister recently, Juma Peterson, and we're moving into the area of trying to educate the entities in the company space, as well as trying to improve the governance in that area. A new innovation in Companies Act also was one of the social and ethics committees, which was the Watchdog Committee and a committee of the board. We also, as a CIBC, decided to test the market and look at how the compliance levels are in terms of implementation of social and ethics committees over the past year. In social ethics, we did a first test on listed companies, and we will expand it to unlisted companies going forward. Just to say that we have seen a really good compliance rate as far as social ethics company compliance in the listed environment. There was a couple of questions that have been asked about external companies, which I presented to the Special Committee on Company Law. There are different views as far as whether they should have or not, seeing that there's not even a primary listing in South Africa, but we're still not trying to get a legal opinion on whether they should have a social ethics committee. Social and ethics committee is seen as one of the foundations and the pillars that was introduced in the Companies Act, and therefore we see ourselves taking a meaningful role to ensure that the policy, as well as what's contained in the legislation, is implemented fully in the South African commercial markets. We move on to the issue of intellectual property. The one area that we've seen quite a bit of a success, which was dragging the deal over the years, is in the distribution of royalty space and the regulation of collective societies. Just to say that we have brought together the collective societies of SEBRA and SAMRO, which is the larger ones. It's a real-time royalty aspect. We've managed to deal with all the issues and the outstanding legal issues and the court cases that were resolving around the distribution effort. We managed to resolve that meaningfully, so much so that distribution was agreed to by the CIPC and the regulator in the space and in the amount of 170 million, which has now been distributed to artists and performing artists in the area. We do see ourselves, in terms of the copyright bill that has been introduced by the DTI, also playing a meaningful role as far as that is concerned, as well as the regulation and the registration of creating societies in the various rights going forward. Honourable Chair and members, I will just now hand over to deal with this part of the financials to my CFO, Ms. Funi Malaza, and I will come back with you to give the course of my report.
teacher, and thank you, honorable members, and thank you to my team, our mother, the TI, as well as to my commissioner. My job is much simpler than my commissioner's job, acting commissioner. So I would just like to look at our annual reports for the year ended March 2014-15. But in order to maybe appreciate it better, one has sort of looked into the comparison. And the first part, obviously, of our annual report that is quite key is looking at the report of the OSA General that was issued in July this year. And comparing our performance, you know, in terms of the AG report, Chair, we've been able to maintain an unqualified opinion if you look at March 2014 and compared to March 2015. From where we are sitting, I would like to say that it's also been, we've had a slight improvement because if you look at what we, the opinion that we got from the Auditor General in March 2014, yes, we had an unqualified audit opinion, but also there was a lack of emphasis as well due to the restatement of the 2013 figures, March 2013 figures. So there were profit errors that were discovered in March 2014, which were relating to March 2013, which were corrected, and that resulted in the AG issuing an unqualified opinion with an emphasis on the matter in March 2014. Chair, we are pleased to say that in March 2015, we did not have any network emphasis. So it was a straight unqualified opinion. Looking in another section as well that the Auditor General reports on, the area of compliance with laws and regulations. In the March 2014 audit report, we were reported as having inadequate steps for the prevention of irregular expenditure. Chair, we are very pleased that under the same area, with regards to compliance with laws and regulations, we did not have significant findings in the current financial year. We are very pleased. In fact, just in a nutshell, if you look at our irregular expenditure, just to highlight and appreciate the improvement, March 2014 in the annual report, we had a balance of 2.4 million. In March 2015, it was 500,000, so it's quite a significant improvement. Just to appreciate what is called the financial position or net asset value. And so, just at high level, looking at our performance, we look at the assets and the liabilities, and obviously then looking at the financial health of CIDC. In terms of non-current assets, or what we normally refer to as capital assets in normal terms, March 2014, we're sitting at 41 million. We made some additions or acquisitions in March 2015, which raised our book value or carrying amount of non-current assets from 41 million to 43 million. And that was about 1.4 million improvement, or 3%. In terms of our current assets, Chair, what is sitting there in current assets is your short-term receivables, but for CIDC specifically, what is sitting in there is mainly our bank accounts, and that alone has improved. If you look at 2014, we had about 1.3 billion. 2015, we're sitting at 1.5 billion. And out of that 1.5 billion balance that is sitting there, I think 98% of the current asset balance is actually cash available. It's 11% improvement. We're quite pleased to report that. As a result, our total assets have also improved by 11%, moving from 1.4 billion in 2014 to 1.6 billion in 2015. So that's quite healthy. Looking at the total liabilities, nothing much there to report here. I think we've moved from 137 million in 2014 to we've decreased to about 117 million in 2015. So that was a 17% decrease, which is quite good. Mainly that's purely because of we had quite a significant provision on some matter that we had when CIPC or CPRO rather changed into CIPC. We had to make a provision for purposes relating to UIF and SCL, and I think it took us quite a couple of years to get a legal opinion as to the date of the liability, whether CIPC is new legal entity moving from CIPO to CIPC, whether which date is the date of liability, or whether are we liable for the UIF and SCL. And that was finally resolved, and we actually had to pay that out to us. Overall, the net asset value, we are quite healthy, Chair. We've moved from 1.2 billion to about 1.5 billion, so it's 30% fat. in our books, which is quite a reasonable improvement. Okay, moving over to the financial performance, or what is normally referred to as income and expenditure performance. Okay, in terms of the total income, we had about 455 million in 2015. We've improved quite well, 10% improvement in March 2015. That moved to 508 million. We look at the details in the following slide, and the total expenditure, I think it's also quite an improvement there, because we've moved from 309 million and to a slight decrease or a savings, which is quite good, depending which way you're looking at it, of 306. So our total expenditure has actually decreased, so it's a slight saving of about 1%. Overall, surplus for the year was 145 in March 2014, and improved quite well by 11%. In March 2015, Chair, you'll also remember that CIDC is 100% self-funded, so we do not have any grants or transfers that you receive on an annual basis. Chair, just high-level maybe details to break down the previous slide in terms of what's really or where our money is coming from or where the spending lies as well, just at high-level. In the total income of 503 for the year, at least 98% of that is from our revenue, which is 513 million that we had, with other income of 9 million. The other income, Chair, most of it is, a significant part of it is prescription. What we do is when we have unrecognized or unidentified receipts from clients, when they transact with us, we normally prescribe those, you know, after, you know, a three-year period. However, we do have as a provision in our policy to say that if a client can come back to us and prove that they're entitled to a refund or whatsoever, we do refund such. And the interest, obviously, because of the increase in our bank balances, that amounted to about 85 million for the 50 financial year. Compared to the budget, Chair, if you look at the total income, we're at 508 million and we had initially budgeted for 503 million. So we have actually exceeded our budgeted performance by at least it's 4.5 million, which is about 1%. Looking at the total expenditure, Chair, at high level, breaking that down to four main categories, employee cost, did not really perform that well. We had a 16% underspending there. The actual spending was 198 million. This is the 238 million that we had planned or intended to have spent for the March 2015 financial year. That is translated to about 39.2 million underspending. I think you will appreciate, I think this committee is also aware of the challenges that as an institution we had in the March 2015 financial year, with the moratorium, you know, that was one set, you know, that we had between CIPC and organized labor. We also had a couple of changes at management and executive level. And so that also did affect our the speed at which as an institution we recruit. But Chair, if I can assure this house that we are working at improving that, we have started really coming up with constructive you know, ways together with organized labor to try and see how we fill in those vacancies. Operating expenditure, we're again about 37% underspending them. Our actual spending was 75.9 million, vis-a-vis the 119 million that was that we had budgeted for. On the admin side, we had about 42% underspending. We had spent 22 million compared to the 45 million that we had initially thought we would spend. Depreciation and payment losses, Chair, that is non-cash, 26% underspending, meaning that we spent 9.4 million instead of 7.5. But that's a non-cash flow item, but maybe to highlight as well, the reason that we had a higher depreciation charge and payment losses, we did a significant review of our fixed asset register, Chair, and as a result, we needed to write off and impair quite significant assets, but not material assets. Yeah, I think the underspending in the expenditure generally is linked to the challenges that we had as an institution in the March, during the March 2015 financial year. High-level comparison of the revenue analysis for the two financial years. So if you look at the orange graph, that is 13-14, the blue graph, that is 14-15, so there's been a 9% improvement there if you compare on a year-to-year basis from 379 to about 430 when you compare at 13-14 to 14-15, which is quite good. Other income, there's been a 5% improvement there from 8.7 million to about 9.1 million, which is also quite good. And remember that we said it's your prescription plus penalties, sundry income as well that you get. Interest as well, that is to be expected because of the increase in our bank balances. There was a 28% improvement from 67 million to about 85 million. Here on the chair, just looking at our operational expenditure. First, starting with the employee cost. Actually, our employee cost improved by 6%, which is quite okay. It's still less than 10%, which is expected general annual increase. So we moved on the employee cost from 186 million in the previous year to about 198 million. In terms of the operating expenditure, that decreased. I think that's what resulted in the overall underspending or decrease of saving, depending how you look at it, of the total expenditure for the year. Operating expenditure that moved, that decreased by 7% from 87 million to about 75 million. If I can highlight, that is also shared mainly due to we're quite significant savings in our internal audit fees. We used to have sort of more of a close to 100% outsourced internal services. And then in the 14-15 financial year, we sort of having a co-sourced arrangement. So quite a lot of work is being done by our internal, by our internal staff. If I can put it that way, our internal audit staff. So that is done internally, so that we did save quite a lot. Admin expenditure as well, there was understanding from 30 million to about 22, really because of the delays that resulted as a result of institutional challenges that we had, like a couple of strikes as well as you can remember as well, and changes in management as well. Those challenges that we had, they did to a certain extent affect our performance and ability as well to implement some of the objectives that we had as an institution. Let me just check with my commissioner. So I'll hand over to my acting commissioner just to do the performance information, and I will return just to do the quarter one financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hundi. Honourable members, moving on to quarter one information as part of the presentation, I will start off by saying that many of the challenges that we faced last year as part of system development and trying to deal with new ways of working are seeing some of it to be seeing vision now in terms of the way the organization is moving. If you look at the targets that were set for the first quarter, we met 14 of the 16 targets, which has been verified by the DTI through the reports given to the minister and returned, and therefore we see the indication that the organization in terms of what it is doing is now working and going forward. There have been underperformance in some of the areas which has been highlighted. I think notable one is the issue of the filling of the vacancies. You do know that we've had a moratorium as far as an agreement with organized labor is concerned. There are grievances that still exist in the area of a matching and placing exercise that was undertaken in 2013. Some of those grievances still exist today, which we are trying to tackle in a collective and consultative manner. But there has been some movement when we do have articles and discussions with them. Recently, as far as the vacancy area concerned, we managed to advertise for positions in the patent examiner space. We've advertised for positions in the trademark examiner space. Just recently, we've advertised for executive and divisional managers in corporate services and in IT and in human capital. And soon we'll also be advertising for more in the call center as well as the IT area, digital posts that are required in order to take the organization forward. Some of the areas that also did not be underperforming and due to some continuous refinement of this indexing system that I keep referring to, which is an automation and it's an innovation in order for us to deal with the speedy resolution of applications. Is that we see some hiccups still flowing through in some of the courses, because it is a system that is built purely in-house. We do not use any form of external service provider. We use in-house capacity in our IT area, but it also requires refinements a lot of work as far as that is concerned. So that is certainly an indication of the innovation space that CIPC plays in. In terms of the changes for the quarter one, and I'll briefly and sweetly go through them, we reintroduced the call center. It was a call that was made by Organ of Labor as well as a call that was made by the minister. We managed to identify space in the building and in the area. We managed to deal with the issue of the infrastructure. There is some infrastructure issues still plaguing us as far as having a fully utilized call center. It's certainly not functioning the way that it should be. We need to capacitize it fully, because when there was a redesign, an organizational redesign in the CIPC, there was never envisioned to have a call center. We were something called the Swedish model, which was developed in the previous strategy in order for backend staff to deal with the calls. That was not accepted, and therefore now we're in the process of introducing a call center. However, the issue, honorable members, is that because we have an approved structure, which never included the call center, we now have to reallocate posts other areas in which to capacitize the call center. So when we have retirements, for example, we move those posts into call center. When we have staff members who feel that they want to play a more meaningful role in the call center, we put a call out in the organization to say, would you like to move from whatever area you find yourself into the call center? And we've gone through various iterations on that. We are certainly dealing with the call center in a very strategic manner, and the strategic focus currently, even in the XO, which is a regular item, because we have to try and get our query resolution call center aspect up and running far better than it has been doing. We have other query resolution mechanisms, which we have introduced as part of innovations, and which I will come to, but we still need to capacitize the call center for you. Education awareness is something that we play a very meaningful role. The Company Act also mandated us to have various aspects of awareness campaigns nationwide. We are fully involved in the program of taking the DTI to the people. I know that my education awareness team on a weekly basis on LinkedIn, Bit of South Africa, speaking about company law and registration, showing and indicating how it is to use the website, how it is to communicate with us, how it is to register, and what company law and how it is to deal with company law ethics and regulation, and we certainly play our part in that area. We've also now been called to assist the small business ministry, which is also in the campus in DTI, in order for us to deal with cooperatives and cooperative registration, but there's also such an area of company law that we also go out and assist their roadshow and their workshops. As far as the stabilization of the labor environment is concerned, in the last 6 months, a lot of strides have been made in this area. In the last 6 months, we have not had any major incidences of unrest due to consultative nature and consultative processes put in place. We have put together something called a transformation committee, which is chaired by an independent chairperson, which is just an ex-commissioner of the CCNA, who comes in and deals with the party's management and organized labor and finds the resolutions and recommendations to EXCO. It is a process which was entrenched by EXCO, it is one of us endorsed, and we will see the progress going forward in order for what recommendations we make going forward. In terms of critical positions, I think I had mentioned in the previous slide that we've interviewed now for critical positions in IT, for critical positions in patent examination, because we are starting to move forward as a standard examination, and we also advertised for the position of executive manager in corporate services, as well as in human capital. The last time I went to Parliament, I didn't mention that we are in the cusp of introducing something called a USSD service. It is one where you can use your cell phone in order to contact the CIPC to resolve queries, and we've seen a great uptake as far as this is concerned. I think I have a slide that's coming later on which deals with the uptake, but just to say that it is fully utilized now. Month on month, we're adding additional services to the USSD service to alleviate the query and congestion with the call center experiences, and this is just another mechanism for us to be with our clients and for us to be able to access. Access is very important to us, to take it very, very seriously, and therefore we try and look at innovative ways for us to reach our clients, and the USD service is certainly one of them. We're seeing a steady increase, as I've shown in the previous slide, in online transactions. We've seen quite a good ICT system stability. The last 2 weeks we had some network issues, we had a maintenance issue on the network, which led us to have a bit of outage, but over the past few months, as we can see from the size of online transactions, there certainly is stability as far as that is concerned. There's much more that's to be done. We're still dealing with pockets of legacy systems. We've just introduced an enterprise management system, which will be managed by an external company to deal with speedy resolutions of any outages we might have in the core infrastructure, and we need to deal with some aspects there. We continue to progress in our collaboration space. Our relationship with SAS is a very strong one. We have direct links with SAS. As soon as an entrepreneur registers a company, he gets the registration for SAS immediately, and therefore we have high-speed links as far as trying to have a one-stop shop and enabler for entrepreneurs. We also have taken on the role of being the issuer of e-certificates for exempted micro enterprises. I have a slide also coming forward. We've seen a massive uptake in this area. It was mandated by the DTI, and the Deputy Minister Messina takes it very seriously, the CIPC, to roll it out to its various service centers when we enter into various provinces, and we certainly have this in our plan, and for BE certificates is seen as one of our core one-stop shop initiatives in collaboration with the Minister of DTI. We've also automated and innovated in space name reservations. We've introduced something called automated name reservation functions, which sees an increase of the turnaround time for the registration. Even though the Companies Act did envisage that you can have companies that can register without names, it's possible. We do see some of them coming through. The majority of companies still prefer to go through the name reservation process. So we've speeded that up, whereby we have built in a bit of process in the backing, and when applications are made, instead of every single application reaching a human being for inspection, business rules have been built into an intelligence has built into the system, whereby the system can clear the name and basically give the name approval. And we've seen a great uptake. More than 50% of all the names that go through the name automated system now is approved by the system, and therefore that increases the speed of registration. We also automated the Britta and company secret changes, something called the 444. It also is linked with the IRBA when ordinances are appointed. We have automatic and real-time verification of who they are, if they haven't been disqualified as auditors, and therefore we can almost immediately register them and appoint them or resign them depending on what process is required by the applicants. The next slide, members, is just an indication when I spoke about what we've done in the quota and what we're doing in the education and awareness space. As you can see, that we've visited practically every province except the Northwest, I think. But basically, we do a lot of work anyway. Wherever we call to, on a daily basis, I receive requests, and on a daily basis, we approve, because we believe it's a mandate for us to educate on our systems, to educate on the law, and therefore our team in the CIPC works very hard as far as going out all over the seminar run and the topics that you can see that we cover in the various workshops. We've also done some additional work in order for us to reach out to our clients. We started something called webinars. It is something that is used a lot by other entities in the private company space, whereby month to month I will go on online and people log in and I'll do a bit of a presentation, or my team will do a presentation, and then we get questions which are asked online, to which we have a team that responds to it. We've seen a very uptake. The last time I was on and doing a webinar, we had something like 1,000 people on board. We even had people as far as China. And then there seems to be some interest in CIPC for China, where people logging from China asking us questions about how to register companies in South Africa. So we basically kind of do and find innovative ways of reaching out to our clients, and then for webinars, we see one of them. We also, on the campus, host seminars on a monthly basis. We advertise and say that it is very well received. In a space of putting a seminar date on the website, we practically sold out in a day. And then we host about 100 people from across the country, and they come from all over South Africa. So the campus, we give them our turnaround time, we show them exactly how to deal with queries, we introduce the managers, we introduce the new stuff that we're doing and innovating, we deal with their queries, and we see also a way of us, as part of our access model, reaching out to our clients and our customers. The next slide, honorable members, is just an indication of the volumes of the electricity service. As I said, it is something that we are building on. We also just recently, in the last week, added an additional functionality where a person can go in and type in the registration of a company, and it will give the BE status on the cell phone. So month on month, as we get a call from clients to ask us certain queries, we give an indication of what is required, and we add to the service going forward in order for us to have real-time information supplied. The next slide is an indication of the BE statistics. As you can see from the time that we launched the service in September 2014, which was then officially launched by the Deputy Minister in, I think it was April 2015, we had approximately 14,500 applications and 14,500 issuing of BE certificates. Probably in the 15,000 mark, because there is a real request for these, and it's a real time. It's the link that we have with SARS. The applicant does not have to make affidavits and doesn't have to go to any verification agencies. It's because we have this real-time verification with the HANA system, with the Department of Home Affairs. It is basically accessed through our self-service terminal, and therefore the certificates are shipped almost immediately and emailed to the clients to whatever email address they provide us with. Going on to some new services that we're going to roll out, honorable members. The first one is something called a third-party or intermediary model. We've been discussing this now for the past probably 6 months. We have the first now where we are checking. It is a service whereby we are taking functionality of our self-service center, which is a biometric and verification and utilization of the collaboration with the home service, and applying it to registration agents, accountants, lawyers, anybody who wants it, who deals with the type of area, who want to amend companies, who want to register companies, who want to change values, who want to change names, who want to change addresses, who want to change financial year ends. Because we have the verification model, which is the use of fingerprints and biometrics, we can roll this out. We are currently in the testing phase of the service. We'll be piloting really shortly. We've identified a couple of pilot partners, many of them in governments, because we believe that some of them should be providing some of the services and some changes of commerce. For example, I know the Chamber of Commerce in KwaZulu-Natal is quite keen, and they're coming on board, and therefore we'll be rolling this out. It's a way of increasing our footprint. It's a way of increasing our automation and electronic and e-services, and it certainly is one way there is faster turnaround time that we've seen, because it's a similar model that we use in our self-services. Something else that we've evolved in terms of our collaboration is that we collaborate with National Treasury, the Department of Finance, as well as SARS, to come up with something called the Central Supplier Database. So the honorable members might have seen the launch of this particular service by the Minister of Finance. My son, the Minister of Finance, were in London about 2 months ago when we launched the service. It is basically taking all the STM, supply chain management database of the various partners, agencies, and municipalities, and putting it into a centralized system. So if a supplier was to supply a service to the department, whichever department it is, it goes, instead of going to the particular department, it goes onto the central supplier database, pulls this information, and then the departments feed off that. It is managed by National Treasury through the collaborations with ourselves and SARS, because we supply and pre-populate the data where they say they are a company. So to prove who the directors are, to prove where they're located, we look at bank accounts and all of that, and SARS proves obviously their tax status. It's something that has been rolled out. The first phase has been rolled out on the 1st of September, with the compulsory phase being next year in the 16-17 financial year. Just touching on some of the investigation aspects of the period, we received 25 new complaints or requests for investigations. We investigated 6, and the majority of them, as per the law we are allowed to do, we can refer them to other regulators where we believe that the complaint is in their regulators. We do refer many to SARS, or refer many to the National Prosecuting Authority, or the police, if it's an aspect of fraud, for example. But we do, we have received 35, and we deal with them timely, as I mentioned earlier. Just the next slide is one for information in terms of our closure, and what we do in terms of the processes and procedures which we follow. One of them is as far as the next steps for the organization is concerned, and this is what we'll try to hope to achieve in the next 6 months, is that as far as our self-service terminal strategy is concerned and our access, we are rolling out to the following provinces very, very soon. In our collaboration with Transit Enterprise Hub, we will be opening up a self-service center in the R in November 2015. We're looking at the Buffalo municipality in Mansani in December 2015 to have a presence in the Eastern Cape. We're looking at the transit to Tabase in February 2016 in Limpopo, and we're looking at the Durban Chamber of Commerce, which should be by the end of this month. I received an email just yesterday from the CEO of the Durban Chamber of Commerce to say they've advertised. We've supplied them with the equipment and the infrastructure to the Durban area. We're waiting for the connectivity, and there's a lot of interest as far as having our presence in KwaZulu-Natal. We certainly want to have a hold on, and we want to have a presence in every single province, not only through self-service centers, which we believe is one way to go, but the other aspect is we can have partnerships and collaborations, and we've seen these partnerships with Transnet, Chambers of Commerce, all municipalities are very fruitful ones to roll out our services. We're also looking at expanding the BE certificate to other channels. And look at 13 third-party model. But it's also called to look at other aspects of EE, not only the micro and dental enterprises, but the large enterprises. So we're still in discussions with the B unit as to how we can truthfully deal with this. They have been a call from the DI for us to look at it, so we're in the phase of sorting it out. We're looking at automation and further digitalization of services. We've gone through a phase now in the last 3 to 4 months in the organization where we just wanted to breathe. We got our IT department to stabilize some of the core infrastructural aspects, some of the core applications, some of the applications we built in-house. So for example, as I mentioned, the indexing system that were popping up a couple of errors, just to try and stabilize them, see fruition in them. Instead of them moving forward to further additional application builds, we thought we'd better look at the ones we have in order to bed down. That has been going on for the last 3 to 4 months. But going forward now, we're looking at new, bringing online new services and automation services. For example, there's a call now to expand our company registration just beyond standard private companies to other non-profit companies, and it's something that we're going to be looking at as an organization. I've mentioned the aspect of substantive patent examination staff being brought on board, and we as an organization are preparing for that. As far as IKS, Indigenous Knowledge Portal System, I'm sure the committee is very much aware of the IP Amendment Laws Act that was passed, which was dealt and deliberated in this house. We, as an implementing agency, is dealing with the issue of a portal system, as well as issue with education and awareness around this. The national IKS register is being fully developed and implemented as we speak, and we have prioritized the full units to deal with this type of work. And the last aspect that I want to deal with is something the implementation of XBRL. It is a business standard business reporting tool. It is also a way of us to reach out to our clients. Many of our clients in the annual return space have to submit their financial statement together with their annual returns. And we have to make it easier for them to use the standard business reporting and a tool whereby they can submit this information to us going forward. Honourable members, I'll just ask that our CFO to deal with the last first quarter financials, and then we will conclude our presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Acting Commissioner, and thank you, Chair, again. I'll be presenting the quarter one financial performance, which is for the period April 2015 to June 2015. Sure, the first slide that is presented is the overview of our annual budget for quarter one as follows. That is on the first column, actually our annual budget, because this is the first presentation for the current financial year, so we thought it is fit for us to remind this committee what was our annual approved budget, which was approved by the same house, and then obviously look at the pro rata budget, meaning what we had budgeted to spend for the quarter and what was actually spent for the quarter and the applicable variances. To adjust the slide refresher, if you look at the annual budget, that's under the column annual budget April 15 to March 16. The revenue for the year we had budgeted annually that we would like to achieve in terms of collection or revenue, 466 million. Pro rated, we had projected that we can be able to collect about 116 million for the quarter. We have overachieved or outdone ourselves in the fact that we are sitting, we have collected about 1.2 million, which is quite good. So we are 14% above target. Looking at the other income, we had a budget annually of 23 million prorated, meaning what we had projected for the quarter. That was about 11.5 million, and we have sort of underachieved by, because the actual is 453,000, and that's a 96% under collection. But remember, Chair, the other income is not really entirely within our control. It's sometimes the penalties, and you like to see an improvement as well in the fourth quarter, because sometimes that is also your prescription fee, you know, meaning that those unidentified payments that were made into our bank account, which have been, you know, outstanding for a period of over 3 years. So we are likely to see an improvement there in the final quarter. In terms of our operational expenditure, that is any other expenditure which is not capital or which is not fixed assets, to put it in simple terms. We planned for the year to spend about 461 million prorated for the quarter, for the 3 months, April to June, which was about 113 million. We have actually achieved 87 million, so we're still an underspending of about 23% for the quarter. But it's slightly better than last year, but it is still an underspending. But I think a lot of the improvements or what my commissioner has shared about in regards to, with regards to the way forward, especially the recruitment and recruitment of staff and the implementation of SSGs. That has been rolling out during the second quarter. So the financial impact, we are likely to see that in the third quarter. So that explains the underpinning in the first quarter. Capital expenditure, we had an annual budget, or we have an annual budget of 23.1 million. We're hoping that we will spend 5.7 million during the third quarter. Unfortunately, we won't be able to spend 500,000, which is a 90% of spending for the quarter. I think the main project that we had in there, we wanted to really invest quite significantly in our network infrastructure in order to improve service delivery. And that basically means try and come out of the BTI network infrastructure support and having CIPC having its own network infrastructure within the BTI campus. Chair, we are still in negotiations with the BTI because it's quite a significant project. But at the same time as well, I think the issue of being uncertain in terms of whether CIPC is expected to move out of the BTI campus, stay in the BTI campus, because I believe that there is also space that is required by other CDI entities. That does raise some uncertainties, as we are working on that. Just an overview of what you have spent to date for the quarter. Just to settle the numbers, it's comparing what you have spent for the quarter versus the annual budget. So basically what this slide is showing, how much of our annual budget have we spent. CapEx budget, the orange graph, that is your unspent portion, the blue graph, that is your spent CapEx, we've only been able to spend 2% of the annual budget. So remember, that is one bottle out of four bottles. So don't be alarmed when you see the graph looking like that. But it's also an interesting picture that one would like to look at in terms of projecting and trying to project what is likely to be our financial performance for the current financial year. At operational level, we have spent only 19% of the annual budget. In terms of the total budget, which is the more interesting part, I think we've only been able to spend 18% of the total annual budget. That is based only on the expenditure side. So we really need to move quite fast. If we cannot probably improve that, we may need to make some revisions during the midterm review. Breaking down the operational performance for quarter one at high level, Chair, we'll just focus on the total only. If you look at the total income, the prorated budget, as highlighted in the previous slide, was 116 million. So we had hoped to collect 116 million for the quarter, and we've exceeded our collection. So we've collected about 1.3 million, which is quite good. So that's about 3% overall in terms of over collection when you look at our revenue. Looking at the expenditure, I will go the line by line because I think expenditure is critical. Employee cost, we had on the prorated budget, we had hoped that we were going to spend about 60.9 million per quarter. We only managed to spend 65 million, which is about 10% underspending, translated to 5.6 million. Chair, as I pointed out in the previous slide as well, I think the discussions regarding the lifting or partial lifting or agreeing or working around the moratorium, which affects the recruitment within CIPC, those we started engaging with organized labor at the beginning of the second quarter, and we have really made significant strides. So the financial impacts of those discussions or agreements that you came out with, which actually allowed us to start recruiting as an institution, the financial impacts are likely to see that in the third quarter. We have gone through in the second quarter quite a number of interviews, and we are finalizing appointments and doing assessments, you know, in various positions as well. So, you know, the third quarter we are likely to see a financial impact in terms of improving the expenditure relating to the employee cost. We're still struggling as well in the operating expenditure and admin expenditure as well. Operating expenditure, we had spent 28 million compared to the 45 million. Admin expenditure, we spent 1 million compared to the projected 5.4 million. Okay, if you look at those two line items, they go hand in hand with SSC, the Self Service Center. So there's been some delays in the implementation of that. And then also the operational costs that relate to the network infrastructure, the support that comes with it as well. So we are likely to see improvement in our operational expenditure, perhaps in the first quarter, I must say. Depreciation, and if you can remember our changes as well in management, I think those happened in the first quarter, if I can remember, April, May. So that did have an impact in terms of the way forward operational performance as an institution. Overall, in terms of expenditure, Chair, our prorated budget was 130 million. We've only been able to spend 87 million, which is a bit significant, I must say, because it's a 30% underspending. But I can assure this house that we are working on that or on improving that. We do have a surplus for the quarter of about 45 million, which is quite good. Looking at the capital expenditure, or what you normally call your spending on fixed assets, I think the significant line item that I will focus on, Chair, is the computer hardware. Again, that has more to do with the network infrastructure. You know, we hope that we would have spent about 3.7 million of that in the first quarter, and it has been going a bit slow, and we are still sitting at 441,000. And overall, in terms of the capital expenditure, our variance is about 5 million because for the quarter we had intended to spend 5.7 million. We only spent 500,000, so we're sort of 90% underspending. I think generally the first quarter does become a bit of a challenge across the board in terms of spending, because that's the quarter when, you know, we are finalizing your previous year financials, you are also planning as well, but not really to put that as an excuse. Chair, that will be all for the financial performance for quarter one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I think we can engage with the presentation. Honorable Williams, Honorable Korenouf, in that order.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to talk about the Auditor General's report and the information that we received from the Auditor General. First of all, I just want to talk about the Auditor General said that the reliability of reporters program, reported performance information is inadequate. And I'd like to know what you're going to do to correct that. Secondly, there were four areas where the Auditor General raised a serious concern. It's about record keeping, reporting, management action plans, and management oversight responsibility, and I'd like you to talk to that. I also want to talk about something the Auditor General raised, and I'm a bit confused because you said that all your IT is in-house, but the Auditor General reported that there is a high degree of reliance on the service providers Waymark and I think it's Rigola, to provide critical information technology functions such as the database administration of Oracle, Infomix, and SQL. And they also go on to say that there is no skills transfer clause within the contract with the service provider, and what the risk could be is if the service provider fails, then all those functions within the CPIs in the organization will collapse with that service provider. And I'd like to know what are you doing to make this function become in-house, because it is a serious problem, because you can't, it should be in-house. There have been cases in government where IT has been outsourced and then those IT companies have collapsed, for instance, in the Department of Labor, and there's been a major issue. So I want to know what you're going to do about that. And could you please explain to me how you could tell us that all your IT is in-house when the Auditor General says it's not? So I just want to know clarity on that. Also, the Auditor General talked to no user account management policy, which has resulted in 50 accounts on a network could not be linked to a specific user. So I just want to know about those things. But it's specifically, I want to know your reference to in-house IT when in actual practice it's a service provider, it's outsourced. I want to know clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of matters. Firstly, when you do an online registration for a company, it's normally you will get a memorandum of incorporation as standard. But as soon as you want to deviate from that and you need a specific memorandum of incorporation, you cannot do that online. Can I just ask you, what's the turnaround times when I do not use the online registrations? And then secondly, business rescue procedure ended. There was a slide and there was a note with that. What's the meaning of that? When do you end business rescue procedure? You know, I just want to know what's the meaning of that. And then coming to the call center. You know, the call center is a heated discussion in this committee for a long time. And I know you want to move away from your traditional model to a so-called, what they say, query resolution model. Are you busy with that? Is the process going forward to resolve that? Then I want to know, you say that you've got a problem with regard to the moratorium to fill certain positions. What are the critical positions not filled? Because, you know, what are the critical positions that are not filled? Do you know, or is it not so critical? Can you run the subsea without those positions? You know, I'm asking that. You know, the salary bill of the state is probably, it's good, but it's also a problem, and it's growing. So we should not simply employ for the sake of employment so that we can show on the slide we've met the budget. We should employ where we can make a difference in service delivery. So that's a vital case. I don't want to hear that you have not reached your budget because of a moratorium. I want to know whether you are filling the correct positions. That's important for service delivery. And then, can I have more information about your third-party model? You know, it's exciting. It's really, or maybe at another time they can do that if there's not time today. But that is just exciting news. What I'm asking that is, I'm getting the feeling SIPSI is really successful in getting out of their silo and talking to other departments, and that's good, and that is what everybody should do with Italian this government. But just for instance, FICA. You've been FICA, the chairperson has been FICA, I've been FICA, everybody in this room has been FICA. And if I go for a cell phone contact, I FICA. If I go to the lawyers, I FICA. If I go to buy anything financially, I FICA. If I want a bank account, I FICA. Now what I want, and that's just a request, where you sit, is it not possible to get it electronically done? So if SIPSI is talking to SARS, and SARS can talk to the FICA center, then if I have FICA once for this year, it must talk to the banks. It must talk to somebody else so that I don't FICA 10, 12 times a year. And it's becoming, you know, it's wasting paper, it's wasting time, it's unproductive, and I think the time has arrived even for SIPC to talk to the National Treasury and trying to resolve this problem. And then on the first quarter, the finances, just refresh my memory, why is the other income? It appears there's a variance of 96%. You know, will that be, you know, I think I've missed you there, but you can just explain that to me. Thank you.
Just for two questions from myself, from my side. Just as a matter of interest on the enforcement investigations, what is the nature of these investigations? What are they about? Two, on registration, just as maybe your comment, you might have actually interacted, I'm sure, maybe with the deputy minister or the deputy president's office, who were leading the government delegation to Japan. There was this complaint from Japan about the registration turnaround time problems when they want to do business here. Just for interest sake, if you have not been approached on that, just those two. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Thank you very much, Honourable Minister, for those questions. The first one, Honourable Williams, just to put your mind at ease, as regarding the AGES report, we do our development mainly in-house. our systems and our core infrastructure needs to be dealt with by a few companies. In the company registration space, it's dealt with a company called Waymark, as you rightfully stated, and Leah Caller, which deals with networks. And in the IP space, we deal with a company called SORT. They deal with the key registration aspects of the key infrastructure of those systems. Those are what we refer to as the legacy applications, as Computron and ERMS. And it is what has been taken over all the way back to Cipro days. And it is something that we require them to maintain those systems because they are at the heart of how we register. When it comes to the new innovations, Honorable Williams, it's what I mentioned. The new developments, for example, name automation, Core 44s, SCT and Bioresics, third-party model, BEE verifications, those have been dealt with by staff. CIPC development application staff members. Obviously, they have inputs into, and Waymark, for example, and so on, have inputs into how those new developments and those new applications interface with their systems, if they are the core infrastructural systems. There is some discussion regarding that when it's done. When it comes to the issue of our reliance, it's something that has been kept for the organization for a long time, especially on the Waymark and the SORT aspect. I know that Waymark, for example, there has been discussion of us moving over to a content management system. There has been a document that has been put together by our ICT staff and our CIO and his core team as to how we should place reliance on that. We were moving forward as far as trying to seek a tender and to move out on it, but it was not approved fully by the EXCO. It was referred back to internal order to deal with the process, and out of that, they've not managed to move. It's been stuck in that process going forward. We do understand that it's something that has been raised by the AG for many, many years regarding our reliance, and we as an organization certainly take it seriously and see how we can not place so much reliance on particularly those two application companies. For example, in the IP space, I just had discussions with the World Intellectual Property Organization and what type of systems that they use and what type of systems are used worldwide by the majority of IP registries. And they've got systems whereby they will implement it for you, and then it is up to the organization to maintain them with their systems, which means that the organization seeks in-house capacity in order to do that. On the 19th and 20th of November, we will be receiving the digitalization and automation manager, Michael, will come to the IPC in order to advise us as to how we move out from the SORT application, if we can, and how do we maintain an IP registry system on our own. And I will obviously report back at the next quarter regarding that as to what is that, because there will be a study and analysis done as to how we can move in that direction. Regarding the issue of the AGIS report as well on the reliability on performance indication, yes, that certainly was mentioned. We disagreed in some aspects. I think to this day we are fighting on some of it, but it appeared in the report. Our management comments were not accepted in some of the areas. It basically relates to mainly two aspects, honorable members. It relates to the reliance on the dating system of the database, because when we deal with our turnaround time, what we call our service delivery standard, we imprint a date on the database as of the disclosure date, the dispatch date, and therefore we work out our turnaround time based on that. The AG would not place reliance on the date, because if there is, for example, a query that comes back into the organization, then that dispatch date changes on the database, and therefore they're saying which date do we place reliance on, and therefore they would not accept that. The other one that there is a further field which is required on the database as to when query comes into the system, and is not an audit term which imprints on the database as to how we dealt with the query on the base, and therefore we're attacking it. We have met with the AG two weeks ago in order for us to tackle this particular issue that has been raised. A third one that was raised by the AG was the issue of them not placing reliance on our website availability, because they're saying that we can't prove a year later that we had 95 or 96 or 92% website availability due to algorithms that have been supplied. The problem is that we are using the sophisticated software, and there's no indication of CIPC using top-notch software, but they're using the sophisticated software. They say they can't understand the algorithm. We're saying that, but in terms of all the literature that is out there regarding the software that imprints the website availability, you should place reliance on that, and refusing to place reliance on that. Basically, the comment was to me, and this is quite anecdotal and quite community, they said that if CIPC is willing to send in Silicon Valley to speak to the people who invented that software, then we can go out and do it. and they put everything, they had a finding against us. To this day, my IT departments are not agreeing. We are agreeing with the issue of the date, which we are changing. We are agreeing with the issue of the database column, which is required to be added. We are not agreeing with someone finding, unfortunately, they are in the age report going forward. On the issue of the MOI amendments, our turnaround time is 25 working days. The reason being is that that is not fully automated when it comes to the processing. Unlike company registrations, which has an engine which runs the background and has business intelligence in order to register for standard companies, when it comes to the amendments or memorandum incorporation, there's a couple of documents which are required. The one document is the actual COR 15.2, which is the amendment documents. The next is a special resolution taken by the company, which we have to have a receipt of, and the other is that identification of the parties, which are submitted to us. When it comes to the issue of our checking on how we amend, we have to look at the previous one to make sure that it's in line with the amendment that is required, unless this is a complete change of an MI. That is the reason why we are fully automated. It's a process which I believe that we should take on. I've had many discussions with myself as to how we try and automate, for example, the special resolution component. We have not found a solution to it as yet. I have to admit. But a 25 working days after the turnaround time of MI amendments. The issue of bills rescue and termination, what does it mean? There's a couple of ways to terminate on November. The one is that you can terminate because the business rescue has been successfully implemented. The other way that you can terminate is that the business rescue plan has been substantially implemented. You have 10 items on the plan in order to come out of business rescue. You've implemented 8 of them. You don't have to do the other 2 because the company can now function properly. Or the other way it can be done is the company is liquidated. Right? So that is termination of business rescue. Regarding the call center, it speaks to the heart of many of our credit resolution terms. The one is trying to utilize, as I said, UST technology, trying to use what we call a query resolution system, which we've implemented. It's a query resolution system which has its own flaws. It's a ticketing system where a person will go online, they will lodge their query in the various categories, they will receive a ticket number back, and thereafter they can check against ticket number. It is something that was also developed by one of the D service providers. At no large, and basically it's an add-on service for another server that we're playing in the IP area, which is called SORT, which we are currently engaging with as trying and refine or establish a new query resolution system. But it is all aspects of what we try to do in engaging with our clients. Coming back to the issue of the call center. The call center, we tried a model that never worked, which we call the Swedish model, I think I mentioned earlier, with the back-end software, we were asked to stop the so inundated with applications, there are no time to answer calls. So there was a call by the ministry, which we totally agree with, and it was a call to myself when I started acting, to implement and establish what is called a traditional call center. Bums on seats, headsets, answering calls, taking queries. We've started on that. As I said, there are challenges as far as that is concerned, but our strategy going forward is to have a call center. We need to capacitize more than we have now, but it's definitely part of our plan and one of our query resolution mechanisms to have a fully fledged call center going forward. On the question of the critical positions, critical positions are always mainly in IT or finance and currently in business. One is that the concept of our CIO is coming to an end in January, so I've advertised that. Our chief technical officer has come back to some of the aspects of in-house development for the question asked by Honorable Williams, has also resigned. He's resigned in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. In this weekend, I will be advertising that as well as the critical position because it's key to some of the aspects of our development and in-house application development. The other areas that my acting CFO keeps coming to me is in the area of finance, especially in supply chain, looking at the control environment, so we need to advertise in that. And as I said, we need to also advertise in some of the areas of the call center. But coming back to the question that you asked, which I totally agree with, we have a structure of 634 posts. We currently have 450 full posts. We are just not going to follow them. I said to my staff the other day in my office that we need to go through a rationalization process of our structure to see exactly what is core to our mandate and what is core to us fulfilling all of that. And those that we do not require full now, we will not fill them. Not for the sake of us having 180 plus vacancies that we need to go through the process, but we have to look at what will drive the organization forward as far as delivering on itself. So you can be assured that I'm also of a similar mind, we're just not going to fill them for the sake of filling. Regarding the question of the third-party model, I'm very excited as I am on the program. I think it's going to be a bit of a game changer. You know, when and I was personally involved as the key commissioner at the time to drive a collaboration and a discussion with the Department of Home Affairs. When we started looking at how we can utilize the verification service, because we take verification of our application, our applicants extremely seriously in the organization, when I approached them as to how we can try and deal with, they mentioned the issue of the harness system. And I got excited. I said, how can we utilize this? By all means, we can give it to anybody. And the point that they made is that at the time, they were in a pilot phase with another government department, and it was just not taking off. We are currently on the second of the banks and started using it, and banks are using it again now from the report that I've seen, being on additional figuring. But we were the second ones to use the harness system as far as verification is concerned. What I don't understand is that it's a gold mine. I believe it's an actual gold mine. I've spoken on the biometric verification with my counterparts and my colleagues in various international jurisdictions. And I think we're very fortunate in that all citizens have fingerprints and we have identity cards and identity numbers. Some jurisdictions don't. So when it comes to the issue of how we can speed up and use automation and turnaround time and utilize the system, it is quite a fortunate position in which we find ourselves. And I don't understand how they're not using it. So we're going to push as hard as we can using the harness system. We're going to look at our third-party model. And the infrastructural requirements for those who want to use it in the space of the industry to which we're in is very little. All you need is a normal laptop. We will then supply you with a link to download the application onto your system. And all you need to purchase is a fingerprint scanner. And we will actually give you the fingerprint scanner specifications in the region of about 1,000 rand. And that's all you will need in order for us to interface directly with the CIPC and to register companies and do a minutes as if you were in a server sense of the CIPC. So it's quite exciting. I'll be very happy to come give a report on it when we fully roll it out. We're in the pilot phase now. We've got a couple of bodies that have identified for it, and therefore we will see how it works going forward. Regarding the issue of... Sorry, I think you've got an additional question on other income.
Thanks, Commissioner. And maybe before I move on to the other income, just a correction that I've noted regarding the in-housing of IT. Chair, I think the in-housing that we've referred to was actually the internal audit. We said there's been a significant improvement there. It used to be sort of more 80-20, meaning 80% outsourced, 20% in-house, and the ratio has changed in the current year. We did not refer to the IT being 100% in-house. Just a minor correction there. Thank you. And coming back to your question on the other income, to say why there's such a huge variance for the quarter, Chair, just to indicate that we'll be implementing what do you call a billing system. What is sitting the other income mainly is the prescription of the unidentified funds. It is slightly higher than the previous years, if you look into it. What we are currently doing, what we're busy with is the implementation of a new billing system, which you can refer to it as a cleaning up of our data system. And then also making sure that we are, you know, using a common sequence in terms of special account number, because currently we're having challenges because our clients are actually the ones given an option to come up with their account names, if you can call it that way. So if you find three Peters, one in Limpopo, another Peter in Gauteng, another Peter in Cape Town, when they select an account number to transact with or a user ID to transact with the CIPC, both of them can go PET or PETA001, PET00, or the other one is PET, you know. So sometimes it does create a confusion in our data system, and their funds do get misallocated, you know. Some other times as well, you know, if they see that there's been a misallocation, they simply open another account with sort of a similar, what do you call, user account. So we are trying to standardize all of that, and we are expecting that as we clean up our data system and implement the new billing system, we are likely to end up with about other income of 23 million at the end of the financial year, which we may need to prescribe, and as a result of merging as well data accounts. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, your two questions, the one was on enforcement and what is the nature of it. The majority of it are company law violation complaints, Honourable Chair. It's when non-record keeping or aspect of failing to hold meetings, failing to inform shareholders of the financial status. It's basically what the violation that we find in Act, and therefore we will make a complaint regarding that. But also we do have a lot of in-house disputes where directors are having fights among themselves, where one might want to go and remove another one. You know, many, over the years, we've had what we call company hijackings, were complaints around that before the big scandal we had many years ago. We came to the House of Trade and explained. Nowadays, what we see is not really company hijacking. We see in-house disputes. Myself and Lele, I'm just using as an example. I go and remove him because we're fighting. I get all the paperwork in order. It looks like it's fine to the CIPC. All the documents are done. And therefore, so we receive quite a bit of complaints regarding that. And then we get normal ones where the aspects of hunting, being hunting. I've just been in discussions recently with the newly appointed acting commissioner of BE, the ex-DDG, Zorbatuli, regarding how we can collaborate with entities, because when there are aspects that they arise like this, the first entity that they call on is the CIPC. So we need to have an engagement with them as to how we take the issue of funding investigation forward, because they have more powers in the act than we do to deal with. And other aspects that are fraud, for example, we refer them to the relevant regulators like the NPA, the police, etc. Honourable Chair, we've not received anything from the Deputy President regarding the issue of Japanese visit on registration turnaround times. I think what I will do is when I get back to my office, we can write to the Deputy President, which we've done in the past. I've written to him on many aspects on state-owned companies, for example, just to inquire as to if he wants to engage in our office regarding the aspect of the visit and any aspect that the CIPC might get involved in. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Oh yes. I will take it, yes. I think I tried to allude to it, Honourable, in the sense that I don't know how they're using it, and I think FIFA can be a classic example of how the harness system can work. Absolutely.
Any follow-up, Honourable Williams?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't think my questions have been answered. I need to know, this over-reliance on IT provider for what the Auditor General calls critical information technology functions. I'd like to know whether or not you're going to keep these service providers, or have you got a process to make this in-house, even though it might be a lazy program, but you are going to have to do these things in-house eventually. My concern is that if through some no fault of yours, the service provider gets hit by a meteor tomorrow, and then you'll come in front of this committee and say, through no fault of ours, the following critical information technology function have failed, and it's our fault. I'd like to know what you're doing to make those in-house. And also, you didn't talk about, in your answering questions, about the problems that the Auditor General raised about record-keeping, reporting, management action plans, and management oversight responsibility. The Auditor General raised these, put them in red in their report to us, which is very, very bad. So we want to know about that. But I really want to know, what are you doing about these critical IT functions that are being outsourced, and what are you doing to make them, you know, internally, put them internally, and is there a timeline? I need lots of information about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. On the IT space, I think I did say that we're trying to deal with of discussions we're having currently with WAPO in order for us to deal with the IT area of dealing with the core provider called SWORD, because we want to bring it in-house and have capabilities to do it in-house. There is going to be a study which is going to be done in November, and therefore we'll be able to inform this committee as to what came out of that study and how we as an organization will do this. There is one aspect that is incidental to this and quite important, is that over a period of time, the CIPC, when it comes to the issue of capacity in the IT area, have been lacking somewhat. It was due to some of the issues around matching and pitching, it was some due to the issues around the moratorium with labor, and we couldn't bring some of the critical positions in-house. We have a IT staff component of approximately 60 staff members. I think we only got about half of that number. And therefore, we need to see how we can, and how we the reliance placed on, for example, Waymark in the company space, and Rehola and so on. I did also mention that our IT division has been looking at how we change over from the current system of called CompuSon into a content management system and registry system going forward. A lot of work was done in that area approximately about a year ago. There were recommendations made as to how we move forward and what type of system we should go out and look for, which could be in-house maintained, but that was never taken forward. There were some issues around how it was put together, the issues of who in the South African market has supplied that infrastructural application in-house maintained, but we have to get a core infrastructural system which is in the marketplace. There was a couple of guesses who it should be. At that stage, in a discussion which was held, it was decided not to proceed with that. And that's where we are today. We have not proceeded once. Maybe I can come back at a future meeting and decide to look at how we are as an institution and how we are as an IT environment dealing with the aspect of not paying so much advance. It is something that's discussed over the last few years. It is something that has not been much known on Honorable William. I have to admit, as far as that is concerned, I noticed the concerns now by the committee, and I will have to look at how to take it forward regarding that.
Thank you, Chair. I think one of the areas that the AG raised was around the system called Admin 4, which relates to cooperatives, where it's the one that created challenges with the dates that we experienced. IT has made an intervention there of making sure that they correct the system as actually going on. But that is, it is important that we conduct validations, and because of that is a legacy system, we have to conduct some of the validations manually every quarter to make sure that there is no conflict and verify it with the records that we basically have. And part of that you cannot resolve unless you move to that electronic content management system, because those are the systems that you cannot be able to maintain internally and our whole system. So once we have a content management system, some of the issues that we have would be resolved as we go ahead. I think the Action Commission has led to the process that we're engaged in to deal with those specific areas.
Thanks, Chair. Just to close in as well and give comfort as well on what the Honourable Member asked, I think the question actually refers to page 8 of our annual report, which is more on performance information. It's paragraph 13 of the AG report, whereby in summary the AG was reporting on the reliability of the reported performance information. Just in a nutshell, he was reporting that he was unable to obtain certain important information and explanation, which you consider necessary in order for him to audit, you know, or assess the reliability of performance information. And he says this was due to the fact that CIPC could not provide sufficient evidence on certain critical data fields. I think that's a key phrase. CIPC could not provide evidence on critical data fields to support the reported performance information. And our records, meaning manual records, were not permitting them to do alternative procedures. So just to be a bit clearer, The records that are being referred to is actually electronic records, and the findings basically relate to performance information, and the root cause for this is purely because the way that we store our performance information electronically so did not have the fit that the AG wanted to see, you know, such as data validation or whatever they call it in IT language, but the AG has summarized it as critical data. So the issue is that the way that we have set up our programming on performance information and storage of our data, the AG tells that it limited it to a certain extent, and we do not have manual records of that or the manual storage of that information. They felt that they could not do alternative procedures. And I think as the acting commissioner as well as the chief strategy executive has correctly pointed out that as part of improving our ICT systems, we are looking at it, and we've already started engaging with the AG to compare the IT data fields to make sure that the way that we set up electronically our performance information is what they will need, or it will be useful to them when they come in to do the audit at year end. So I think the initial meeting has already taken place about 2 weeks ago.
Thank you for presentation, advocate with your team. I think on this one we have concluded. I'm sure, of course, we'll be interfacing with you. And yeah, I should get goes on. Some of the issues, I'm sure, will come back to them to see where is the improvement on the issues that you are seeing raised by the Auditor General. But thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Did you raise your hand, Honourable President? I didn't see, I'm sorry. What do you have any issue you want to raise?
Firstly, I apologize for coming late. I missed most of the presentation and I had to work through this quick. I'm running between committees. we do nuclear in energy, which is quite important. But anyways, just my 2 cents worth on this. If I look at most of the stuff, the complaints and the compliance of businesses and the things here, you know, I think over-regulating of the economy and the economic environment of entrepreneurs and businesses is hampering the economy in this country. And the underspending on key incentives and innovation programs, especially within the manufacturing sector, we see now downstream manufacturing from the mines. For example, Charlotte Mittal, the steel industry and things like that. We need incentives to boost our company in the manufacturing sector, and the job creation targets that we will set were also not met. Thank you, Jim.
And you, and I don't think on those issues you need to, but it is common, and I think that these are issues which we're not dealing with the full under usage. But these issues which of course we've been deliberating with other entities of the department which we've engaged with. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity.
Members will break for 5 minutes coffee before we get another presentation.
Thank you. PNG. We'll email the presentation after the meeting.
Thank you.
I'm from the Chalmers, and Tim always emails us, and then we send it to us.
Thank you.
We should pull out violators and things between fascism and we had some facts.
Have you?
Our laptop crashed last year. So,
email it rather.
Yeah, email it after.
Thank you.
Cool. So I've requested the audio recording from Livoyor.
Okay.
So when we get back to the office, Livoyor will probably bring the audio recording to
us. Yeah, because I've got it in. Yeah.
Thank you. Your name?
Sean.
Sean.
Anthony. Anthony.
I think we can continue, we can start. Let's welcome the company's tribunal, the advocate with his team. Advocate, I will leave it to you to introduce your team before you start making your presentation. Over to you, advocate. Thank you.
Chairperson, Honorable Kalanko, honorable members of this forum, I see the GCOO is not available of the DTI. I wanted to recognize her. Let me take the liberty at the outset just to outline how we are going to do our presentation so that you shouldn't be surprised. I assure you, do not recognize, it's not going to be tedious. And this will give me an opportunity to also introduce the company's tribunal standing before this August forum. To my left is Ms. Agnes Marcellignani, the full-time member of the tribunal, who deals with the day-to-day running activities of the company's tribunal. It means where substance and form of the issues pertaining to pure administration comes to the fore, she will be addressed in this forum. And you will see next to her, it's the chief financial officer of the company's tribunal, Mrs. Irene Matato. Where financial issues come to the fore, she will take the stand to address this August forum. In as far as pure registry issues are concerned, the registrar, Ms. Deboho Mputle, next to Ms. Irene Matato, will deal with the subject. As you can imagine, members, the company's tribunal is an adjudicatory body. All that it has to focus on is adjudication and compliance. Unlike the CIPC, we do not deal with governance. And this distinction is very critical so that you should appreciate our presentation. Now, I will start by referring to slides. And don't be surprised that when we want to simplify the process of the presentation, we'll be using headings, Chairperson, so that it should be easy for us to team from the same team sheet and configure it with the style of our presentation. At the outset, I would like to draw attention to the slide headed Mandate Contribution to IPAP/NDP. Now, this one would appreciate that the company's tribunal is a quasi judicial firm. It's an adjudicatory body. Now, if you appreciate that its functions are so easy to adjudicate matters, then you'll appreciate the significance of the approach of this presentation. Of significance also is this forum to appreciate that the company's tribunal also serves as an alternative dispute resolution forum. But of significance is the legislature deemed it fit to give the company's tribunal functions of reviewing the decisions of the CIPC. Now, this relationship and background is very critical to our presentation. And I'm certain that members of this August forum, honorable members, appreciate this background. Then we are willing to show. You will see that in doing this critical function and making this adjudicatory responsibilities, we have achieved a number of strides. For instance, 80% of the decisions are issued within 30 days from the date of hearing. Now, as you can imagine, we adjudicate matters. I assure you, I act as a judge. I rarely give my decisions within such a turnaround period. It's not easy. But the company's tribunal is performing this task. It meets those functions within the time span. And you will know that 90% of the decisions are issued within 30 days from the date of allocation. There's allocation when the matters are being allocated, and there's also hearing. Now, that's very significant. Now, in as far as resolution of disputes in terms of the alternative dispute resolution is concerned, 40% of the cases are finalized in terms of ADR after the date of hearing. It's also a significant stride. And you should bear in mind that this is significant because the company's tribunal serves as an alternative dispute resolution forum. We are not like courts. The framers of the Companies Act and those who deem fit with the farsightedness to see that the company's tribunal is to be there were farsighted enough to make the point and appreciate that we have to give those decisions speedily. Whether it's adjudicating cases or resolving disputes from the alternative dispute forum angle. Now, those cases, 14% are finalized in terms of the timeline within the time span of the date of hearing. All cases that have been set down for hearing are finalized. Now, in as far as the operational effectiveness is concerned, I'll quickly summarize it and I'll give it over to the full-time member as I have. 78% of procurement with level 1, 2 and 3 contributors, 97% of suppliers paid within 30 days. We are meeting also this turnaround period. Our suppliers are not made to suffer. And we know we respect this National Treasury Directive. Of significance is the fact that since its operation in 2012, the company's tribunal has always received an unqualified audit opinion. Now, I would like to draw your attention to the slide headed Key Highlights 2014-2015 Annual Report. We've already highlighted that 90% of the cases are decided within 30 days from the date of allocation, compared to 69% in 2013-2014. This is an incredible improvement, honorable members. One would say confidently that's an improvement by 81% if you're to subject it to percentages. In 2013-2014, we have only one ADR matter. Since then, around 2014 and 2015, we now have 10. This is a significant growth. Now, of critical importance is probably members are asking themselves the question, why is it so slow in as far as ADR is concerned? You will remember that the legislature in this country is trying to encourage alternative dispute resolution of all cases, irrespective of the nature. But in as far as company law disputes are concerned, the company's tribunal is assuming that function and it will even assist the courts in that area. I have held several meetings with the judge president of the North Gauteng and South Gauteng High Court, Justice Dasmi Mulambo, and I'm preparing a nota up for him that will facilitate a solution where the company's tribunal will be receiving a lot of cases from the courts. So you might see instances where, instead of judges adjudicating disputes that relate to company law, some of the disputes would be referred to the companies trading up. And this is very significant. An arrangement is also being made to link with the Chief Justice to make the point that all courts in the country appreciate the importance of the companies trading up in as far as alternative dispute resolution forum is concerned. There's been an increase in the number of cases handled in the past 3 years. For instance, if you look at the beginning of the year 2012-2013, we had 191 cases. The subsequent year, 2013-2014, we had 296 cases. And the current year, 2014-2015, we have 326 cases. This slide increases for itself. Only one decision has been taken for review since inception. Now, you'd understand that in our country, honorable members, forums have got ranks. For instance, if a member of the public or any interest party is not happy with the decisions of the company's tribunal, they could review those decisions by taking them to a higher court. And those decisions can only be challenged by way of a review. Since its inception, the company's tribunal has only had one decision taken on review. It's quite an achievement. I can imagine how many cases of the High Court are taken to a higher court, the Supreme Court of Appeals, and how many cases of the Supreme Court of Appeals are taken to the Constitutional Court. I think it informs you about the quality of the decisions that members of the company's tribunal make. I've mentioned the unqualified audit opinion, and it's been a pattern in the past 3 consecutive years since the inception of the company's tribunal. The Attorney General's That's what the report shows, improvement in the tribunal's AOPI performance. It speaks for itself, its stubbornly standing before members. There's been reduction in regular expenditure. Here the CFO might elaborate on these aspects if need be. Now, in this area, we assure you that we need the letter and spirit of the Public Finance Management Act and Treasury Regulations. There's been 100% compliance to cost attainment National Treasury instructions. If need be, the CFO will have to deliberate. But the appointment of internal auditors, PwC, it's in line with our accountability and transparency responsibility, in line with the National Treasury instructions. There's been an increase in the number of part-time tribunal members. In terms of the Act, Section 190 of the Companies Act says that the Companies Tribunal consists of a chair and not less than 10 members. Amongst them, it's part-time members and only one full-time member. As I'm addressing this forum, we have 12 members, 11 of which are part-time, one is full-time, and it's Ms. Masilunyane standing next to me, who discharges the everyday administrative functions of the company's tribunal. 53% increase in the number of personnel compared to previous financial year, including appointment of the CFO. I've already introduced her to you. And if appointed in terms of supply chain management, part of skilling the youth. As you may know, this August forum knows how critical supply chain management is in the area of procurement of goods and services in our country. And I'm proud to remind you, honorable members, that our country is the only country where procurement is constitutionalized. That's why we have Section 12 and 17 of the Constitution. And I assure you that the Companies Tribunal meets the letter and test of supply chain management in the area of procurement. Now, we turn to the slide headed turnaround time in adjudication of cases. Standing before you is that pattern that signifies the timelines of adjudication of 80% of the decisions which we issue within 30 days from the date of hearing and 90% issued within 30 days from the date of allocation. Once again, appreciate that it's not easy to decide these matters because members of the tribunal apply their mind, they digest the facts, and they make it a point that they write credible decisions. And I need to re-emphasize once again by iterating that only one decision is subject to review. On this basis, the company's tribunal passes with flying colors. Slide had the total number of cases handled. It's doubly standing before you. I've already addressed this aspect in line with the increase. I would like us to directly go to the slide headed nature of cases handled. Now, this gives you a clue about the type of matters which the company's tribunal entertains. All these matters are underpinned on company law elements and company law disputes. The registry could speak authoritatively on this, but for the sake of expediency, I will summarize some of them for the sake of interest. Access to records. Our country emphasizes the constitutional legacy of transparency, openness, and accountability. Access to records is a critical disputed matter in as far as companies' disputes are concerned. Alternative dispute resolution, it is the bedrock upon which the legislature in this country was far-sighted to make the point that the company's tribunal is in place to provide this alternative dispute resolution forum. Change to financial year end, the honest disputes about some members not being able to attend, company restorations, compliance notice, directors' disputes, the honest directors' disputes. If you look at the long title to the Companies Act, you realize that the preamble to the long title overemphasized the importance of companies in our country. Companies could position the economics and the economy of South Africa. And I think if it takes stock, you start to realize that our country is starting to be taken seriously in this regard, particularly given the energy and the sense and the vision of Minister Davis who drives these processes. Now, of significance in this area and the relevancy is that companies are critical in positioning our country, and we can only achieve that if we make it a point that companies' disputes are resolved speedily. Company directors have to focus on turning the economy around. Now, you will see that other issues and matters that the companies driving at deals with is holding off annual general meetings, name disputes, a common occurrence. A lot of our cases relates to name disputes after we have resolved this detail from the CIPC, outstanding information that is in line with the constitutional injunction, honorable members, saying that transparency, accountability, and openness in our country is very critical. This is in line with Section 82 of the Constitution, review of CIPC decision. Now, that's the real function of the company's trailer. This is also the bedrock. We review decisions of the company's Intellectual Property Commission. Social ethics exemptions, exemptions of certain individuals and members and entities seeking to be diluted, exemptions in terms of Section 6.2 to be exempted from being bound by memorandum of understanding, for instance, substituted service, where, for instance, you cannot set process of a company's tribunal on individuals and entities. What you do, look for alternative service. For instance, if you can't serve a person at their house, at the principal piece of business, you can have a digital citation alternative service by serving through a radio, serving through email, serving through writing post in a newspaper article. Variation of orders. There's always a need to change the orders of the company's tribunal, the CIPC. Now, this informs you about the nature of the cases that the company's tribunal handled. And I assure you, members of the company's tribunal discharge these functions without fail. Slide-headed total number of SEC applications per sector is standing before you. You can see that the cases involve various sectors of our landscape and economy, agriculture, aviation, construction, albeit you'll see that some percentages by the graph are small, entertainment, financial health, homeowners association, you will see that financial is the most compelling and there's a need for applications to be made for social ethics committee exemptions. Labor, information technology, manufacturing is critical to our economy, slightly higher mining, one of the dynamics that makes our economy to turn around, others, pending adjudication, property rental and sales, religious organizations, rental and retail. Now, human resources. I would like to hand over to Ms. Mashiling, and I would like her to deal with this slide and the subsequent four slides. Over to you, Ms. Mashiling.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. In terms of our human resources, we've got an approved staff establishment of 28 positions. We have funded posts, there are 15 funded posts over the 3-year period, and we had filled as at the year end 13 positions. We also have filled 10 positions. There were two vacancies, and those vacancies were in the finance division. In the finance division, we have three positions, and at the year end, there was only the CFO, unfortunately, in that position, and that, to some extent, put a strain on issues relating to financial year end. The next slide deals with finance, and I would like to hand it over to the CFO to deal with. Okay. I will pass this slide and go to the next one. This slide that we are putting on is based basically on the engagement that we have had with the committee. Last time in that meeting, there was issues of governance that were concerning to the committee, and we felt that we need to address those both broadly for the committee to have a sense of the governance mechanism in the organization and a sense of comfort that we have addressed all the issues relating to governance and risk. In terms of our audit, we had appointed, as the chairperson has indicated, appointed internal auditors, and PwC was our internal auditors for a period of 1 year. And what they had done is they had developed a 3-year strategic plan which was rolled out, and there was 1 year operational plan. Their contract has since come to an end, but we do have new auditors on board, and those are called Business Innovation Group. They have a 3 year contract. PwC, as our internal auditors, in terms of the functional areas that they have audited our supply chain management, they've audited our petty cash, they've audited our information technology, they've audited our human resource, they've audited our risk management, our annual performance plan, our audit of performance information, and they've also done a performance audit, and also issues relating to our IT governance, and also our annual financial statement, they reviewed that. And also on the, all those above-mentioned areas, they also did a follow-up review. In terms of also just to ensure that the policies and procedures and systems that are in place are adequate and effective for an organization such as the Companies Tribunal, and that the policies or procedures or systems that are necessary in terms of the various legislation are in fact in place at the Companies Tribunal. What they then did, they did a comparative matrix of the ideal policies and procedures that should be in place at an organization such as the Companies Tribunal, whether or not those policies and procedures are in place against what should in fact be the ideal. And the functional area in terms of where they looked at whether we do have the relevant standard policies and procedures in place was around planning and budgeting, and also around expenditure management, procurement management, asset liability, our banking, cash management and investment, our accounting and reporting requirements, our corporate governance and related matters. And also they looked at issues of corporate services and unauthorized, irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I must say that there was not a significant adverse, you know, or gaps, let me say not adverse, there was no significant gaps that was fine in terms of the framework that we as an organization have in place and what should ideally be in place. So that was really comforting. The Audit and Risk Committee of the organization throughout the year in terms of quarterly meeting, they did review all of the, and monitor all of the areas that the internal auditors did audit. And as well as another area, there was a report that was commissioned by the Department of Trade and Industry that was produced by Grant Thornton, which was raised at this committee in the previous meeting that we've had. The Audit and Risk Committee of the organization did monitor that those control weaknesses that were identified in the report also of Grant Thornton. And in terms of both the internal audit findings and also in terms of the Grant Thornton control weaknesses findings, management has developed action plans. We've put those plans in place and we report on those plans quarterly to the Audit and Risk Committee. And in terms of internal findings of PwC, we have already addressed 52% of those findings. And most of the outstanding findings were related to the IT issues. And in terms of IT, there was only one position in the structure for a deputy IT manager. We've just filled the position in March, and the issues relating to IT will be addressed and are being addressed. One of the major findings was that there is a need for us to have, which had a ripple effect on a number of areas, was that there's a need for us to have a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Trade and Industry, since most of the bulk of our IT infrastructure is embedded in the DTI's infrastructure and control and environment. So that findings around IT is the one that we are currently addressing, and we are confident that the percentage in terms of the internal finding will increase in the quarter. We've also addressed issues, 73% of the Grant Thornton weaknesses, control weaknesses that were identified. And apart from the quarterly report that we give to the Audit and Risk Committee, the chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee reports to the Minister of Trade and Industry on our progress with regard to the Grant Thornton report and to all other internal audit matters. But we have also incorporated, which is going to be reviewed by the new internal auditors, that is Business Innovation Group, that is due to start very soon in October, is that they will be reviewing the control weaknesses that we have been reporting that we put in place that addresses the issues of the Grant Thornton report. So that's taken care of. And finally, PwC, as you can see in our annual report, our 2014-15 annual report, this provides assurance that our internal controls are in place and that they are functioning effectively and efficiently, and that there were areas that needed to introduce mitigating controls, which we are currently doing, as I said, we put in management action plans. In terms of the progress that we have made against the findings of the Auditor General, as we have indicated, we have received an unqualified audit opinion. There were two findings that were raised by the Auditor General. In total, it was 11. We have addressed, as we speak currently, we have addressed 7 out of the 11 findings. And that gives us a 64%, you know, of progress that we have made in terms of addressing the AG's findings. Basically, the findings are related to the annual financial statement, broadly speaking. As you can see, those are the areas. We addressed those issues as they were raised by the Auditor General, and we even audited on the measures that we as an organization took in order to address the findings. And the fact that we received an unqualified audit opinion is an indication that the Auditor General was satisfied with the manner in which we have addressed this audit findings, the one that we have indicated that we had addressed during the audit process itself. As I've indicated, there were issues around the annual financial statement, there were issues around the audit charter, which was reviewed by the Audit and Risk Committee, just had to be approved, and this has subsequently been done. The next issue related to the procurement process that was followed in prior years, in the 2012 and 2013 financial year, as well as in the 2013-2014 financial years. We were not in agreement with the Auditor General on this finding, and what we have agreed with him was that as management, we will undertake an investigation into these transactions that were highlighted by the Auditor General. And in the financial year of 2014-2015, we will report on the outcome of our investigation. And the Auditor General will also audit us on the investigation, basically the outcome of the investigation. He will indicate whether or not he agrees with our findings that relates to those transactions that took place in prior years. The other issue that the AG related to the travel policy, Judge, as I've indicated, we only had one person in finance, which was the CFO. So there was a HR capacity constraint. We were not in position to update our travel policy. But what is comforting is that the cost containment measures, as communicated by the Treasurer, was communicated to the whole staff establishment, and that compliance was monitored against that cost containment measure. It was only to formally incorporate those measures into our travel policy that the AG find that it was outstanding. We should have done that. In terms of the other findings of the AG, they related to the IT issues in terms of access to the system by users and the upgrading processes that we follow in terms of making changes to our IT system. And as I've indicated, we've just appointed the IT deputy manager, and he's looking into these issues. So those are the findings of the Auditor General, and we're confident that we have addressed most of them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson and honorable members, I would like Ms. Mrs. Mukato, the CFO, to deal with the slide headed budget spend per program 2014-2015. Budget spend per program 2014-2015. We have to recapitulate and go back to the earlier slides. I've requested Ms. Masilenyane during her presentation to go past the slide because it's reserved for the CFO to deal with. The CFO will also address the slide headed progress on issues raised by the Auditor General. The slide that Ms. Masilenyane introduced on the statement identifies as far as the cash flow statement is concerned. Over to you, Ms. Mrs. Matato.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members. I'll be taking you through the budget plans for the 2014-15 financial year. A detailed budget in the annual report, I'll just highlight on the thing that I consider important for you to consider. The budget for company tribunal for 2014-15 was 14.6 million. And of that, we had a surplus of 1 million. So there was a good progress because 94% of the budget was spent compared to 80%, which was spent in 2018-14. In terms of the program, we only have two programs, which is adjudication, which caters for the members' needs, the fees, and other operational needs. And we've got administration, which is the program that takes care for the staff of tribunal. And of that, the budget allocation for adjudication for the year was 2.7 million, administration was 11.8 million. And in all the programs, we did spend well. However, on the adjudication, we went a bit overspent. It was mainly due to the policy changes within the organization, which was not taken care of when the budget focus was done. And also, the issue of the surplus for the year was mainly due to the fact that some of the procurement processes were not finalized during the year. Hence, in the annual report, we reflect a total commitment of 786,000. And mainly, it was due to the fact that some of the vacant codes, which were budgeted for during the year, were not occupied during the year. Hence, we got a surplus. However, the majority of the funds for the tribunal are channeled through the compensation of employees, which constitute 59%, and the tribunal member fees, which constitute 20%, and other operational and administrative expenses, which is 21%. And in terms of our the revenue, we rely mainly on the grant and the interest that we receive from the favorable bank balance. Those are the two main sources of income for the tribunal. And in terms of the financial position, during the year we did receive the increase in our assets. It's mainly due to the assets that were donated by the DTI to the company's tribunal. And also our main asset is our cash at bank due to the surplus that we've been receiving since the tribunal budget. That's mainly the financial position of tribunal. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, honorable fellow and members of this August forum, I would like to direct your attention to the first quarter performance report. We'll be using the same process of identifying the topic and commenting on the slides as we progress with the discussion. I would like to draw attention to the slide headed APP project activities for 2015-2016. Point one, piloting of electronic case management system is what we are planning. The whole world nowadays is gravitating towards electronic case management system. It means the laborious tendency of having cases on files might diminish. Some of honorable members know that the legislature is in contemplating to endorse this process and system to avoid corruption and disappearance of docex in criminal courts, disappearance of case files in civil litigation. And this process, we assure you that the company's tribunal has got its fingertips on the pulse to make the point that it also adapts to this development. What we've achieved a set target of issuing of decisions in line with that planning. Line 3, achieving set targets in the finalization of disputes, still planning part research, still planning part advocacy service, still planning part sound financial management is very critical. The next slide, first quarter achievements. I would like the registry to address this important.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. In the third quarter, we issued 85% of decisions within 3 days from date of allocation. This is as decisions that were only allocated, they were decided on paper, and no hearings were held during the first quarter. And then we finalized 25% of ADR cases received. The test report on China's benchmark of jurisdiction with similar mandate. The media instance of the media coverage and actually was published in the Business Day newspaper, and we held outreaches at Citibank and Wardlow. We developed the service delivery improvement plan and business charter, and introduced an ethics hotline managed by the lawyers. We also compiled an electronic quarterly bulletin and published in the first month of quarter two.
I would like to add Chairperson Galvin, honorable members of this August forum, that we had a roadshow in February, which was very successful, and it positioned the company's tribunal to be in touch with its statutory mandate. The next slide is set a strategy to overcome areas of underperformance. I would like a full-time member to deal with that slide and the next slide, headed resources.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the Registrar has indicated, we have achieved 80% of our target in terms of the issuing of turnaround times. We have achieved 85%, and therefore there was a underperformance of 5%. And underperformance basically is due to the fact that some of the members were new and therefore took a little bit longer in finalizing the decision, but the situation is currently improving. We are sending them reminders just to make sure that we meet our turnaround time. We had two incidences of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that amounted to 9,696.36 rand. And we have introduced consequence management to ensure that people adhere to procurement processes, adhere to the PMA. In this instance, for example, one of the staff members missed the flight for a meeting that was attended. We introduced the necessary disciplinary measures just to make sure that the situation could be avoided or not, and we find that it could have been avoided. And he admitted he took responsibility and said, I'm prepared to reinvest the organization. So in both instances, measures were taken to recover the amount. So we do not have, going forward, we do not have any fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and those amounts are being recovered from the two staff members' consent. They have signed the necessary consent documents. In terms of our budget, we have a 20% underspending, and that underspending basically, as we've indicated, there were some vacancies in the corporate service and also in finance. And as one person was in finance, you can imagine that it's taking a little bit longer for us to do some of the procurement services, and also in terms of corporate, in order to fast-track some of the projects that we had in place for the year. Also, in terms of the development of the case management system, as I've indicated, the IT deputy manager came on board in March, and therefore the priority was that he must focus on those things that the AG has raised as findings, and that's what he has done. And therefore, we had to adjust our timeline in terms of the development of the case management system. Our, as I indicated previously, we've got an approved staff establishment of 28 positions, and this year we are going to be, over the next 3 years, 16 positions. We currently have filled in, as at the end of the first quarter, we had 15 positions that were filled, and also one intern, and we had one vacancy. Thank you, Chef.
I would like to, through a permission, Chairperson, Honorable Galapo and Honorable Members, to recall the CFO to address the slides in financial performance. Over to you, CFO.
Thank you, Chair and Honorable Members. With regard to the first quarter's financial performance, we've got the budget for the year 2016. Our budget is 15.6 million, which comprises of the transfer from the DTI of 14.2 million and the interest and other income that we will source from our surplus cash. And the majority of the budget is on employee-related costs, tribunal membership, and other operating and administrative expenses. With regard to the actual spending, we have only spent 20% of our budget at the end of the first quarter. Those are the reasons have been alluded to by the full-time tribunal members. It was mainly due to some capacity constraints, and also because it was the period when it was during the audit of the annual financial statements. However, we have made progress since then. In terms of our employee-related costs, our variance stood at 81% as at the end of the first quarter. Our other operating expenses is 73%. Administrative expense is 86%. Tribunal members fees, 84%. External audit fees, 98%. Depreciation and amortization, we were overspent. This was mainly because of the assets that were donated to tribunal by the DTI, which were not really foreseen during the time when the budget was prepared. As at the end of the first quarter, compared to our spending and the budget for the year, we had 11.6 million surplus, which our aim is to spend 95% of our budget as at the end of the year, and we are currently making progress. Thank you, Chair.
For the edifice of this forum, it speaks for itself that the company's tribunal relies on the grants from the DTI and National Treasury. At one time or the other, the minister challenged the company's tribunal, and we challenged the minister that we would like to generate our own income. And we produced a draft document that demonstrated that the company's tribunal could generate its own income if it shares in the space of some of the activities that have been done by our sister agencies. Now, I do not want to create controversy, especially in drawing debts against the CIPC. I assure you, honorable members, they have some functions which have to belong to the company's tribunal. Those functions were to be legislated either by an amendment and to come to us. We'll be able to generate an income. The minister, with his farsightedness, had reservations after we prepared that document to demonstrate that we could generate our income. Of course, the issues of access to courts, to the tribunal, also came to the fore, that in generating income, are you going to isolate some of the members of our community because we have to charge a fee? All those factors came to the basket, and the realistic solution was for the moment to park this vision of generating income for the company's tribunal. Let me conclude by addressing challenges there's a slight headache challenge standing in front of you, and I assure you that no one is better qualified to address this aspect than the full-time member before I go to my concluding remarks. I'm giving over to her.
Thank you, Chairperson. As we've been alluding throughout the process, for the first quarter, the challenges have been HR limitations in terms of the vacancies that we had to fill, both in finance and in corporate service. We have done that. We have filled the two vacancies in finance. The other challenge was that there was a CCMA case that was lost by one of the employees that was transferred from the IPC to the Companies Tribunal. But as a CCMA, we were available. The employee realized he has no case against the Companies Tribunal and he has withdrawn the matter. The implication of that is that that case cannot be raised again against the Companies Tribunal. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, honorable members, the ineluctable conclusion is that the company's tribunal is functioning and discharging the statutory mandate. We've provided you with a chart, a compass, the boat, to go and look for the fish, for the navigation we lead it to this August forum. Your infinite wisdom would assist us with the questions that we'd be posing if need be. We thank you.
Thank you, Advocate. Members, we can deliberate on the presentation. Honorable Coronel, followed by Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the presentation. Just two questions. It's on the finances. If you look at your 2013-14 performance in comparison with 2014-15 comparison, and I look specifically at administrative expenses, for 2013-14 it was just over 585,000 rand, and then it went up to 1.35 million. I just want to explanation for that, why it went up so drastically, and then also employee-related costs went up from 3.8 million to 8.1 million, more than double. So, if I can just have an explanation for that. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Yes, I also want to welcome the input. Firstly, I want to say that I think that the company tribunal is doing a great job. And I'd like to know, other than the creating your own income, how can Parliament assist you to do an even better job? Thank you.
Honorable Kalako, I beg your pardon, sir. I don't know whether you want to pose a question. I apologize.
No. I was saying you can respond.
Honorable Kornoff, I'm going to remit the two questions to the CFO regarding the 2014-2015 performance and the escalation. And the employment-related costs, why did it double? I would like the CFO to deal with them. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the administrative expenses, the reason for the increase is mainly because in 2013-14, Tribunal was still more in the early stages of being in operational, and a lot of activities were starting to happen in 2014-15. For example, in terms of the advocacy services, the advertising and marketing, Tribunal reached out to the various stakeholders, and there were a lot of costs that were incurred compared to the previous financial year. And also the appointment of the internal auditors, which was done for the first time in 2014-15, that's another expenditure that was incurred, which were never there in 2014. And also, as Betty mentioned, we also hosted a seminar, which is something that was done for the first time. So therefore, there was the cost which was incurred. Hence, there is a huge increase compared to 2014-15 with 2013-14. And with regard to the employee-related costs, it was also mentioned that in the previous financial year, there were not staff members that were employed, and a lot of staff members were employed in 2014-15, e.g. the CFO was appointed in 2014-15, and other staff members there that were transferred also from CITC, the legal officers that were transferred. Those are mainly the reason why there is a bit of an increase in cost. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The question of Honorable Williams, which is so generous and it excites me, given the importance and the placing of the legislature in our democracy. What is significant is that if the functions of the company's tribunal as against other sister agencies like the Consumer Tribunal, the Consumer Commission, the CIPC, were to be analyzed, the legislature would realize that there are certain functions which have to be placed in the company tribunal. By your suggestion, I think I could prepare a memorandum to that effect. Now, that thinking would enhance our mandate. Simply put, Honorable William, the question is, what could we do to enhance the mandate of the company tribunal? The company tribunal is underutilized, I assure you. It could do much more. For instance, Honorable Williams, if you look at the lifespan and the seniority of our judges, in some divisions they are overworked. There's a lot of work, there are cases that go before them that would not go before them. For instance, let's take a simple example of a minor company shareholders dispute between a community in Tofimvaba, in Transkei, and the mining giants there. That type of a dispute you'd like to refer to the company's tribunal. Judges have such great challenges in developing the jurisprudence of our law. Let them focus on disputes, which I think make our country to turn around in as far as civil and criminal litigation is concerned. So to be precise, if the legislature could enhance the mandate of the company's tribunal, we could find an answer, Honorable Williams.
Thank you. Any other follow-up? Honorable Williams?
Chair, I'm just asking if that suggestion could be put in writing and sent to the secretary of the committee so that we've got it in writing so that we can work on it in the future. Thank you.
Certainly. We'll do that, certainly. I beg your pardon. I think I know that the questions came from Honorable Korenov and Honorable Williams. So, in one of the responses, I should have mentioned Honorable Korenov, and I beg your pardon.
Thank you very much, Advocate, with your team for your presentation. I think we'll take other issues. It's interesting what you are raising. And as I'm sitting here, I know there have been a running case between the community in Lusikisik and the mining Australian mining company. And going to court, it takes time, especially for those communities. So we'll be very much interested to get opinions so that we can, as legislature, deliberate with the purpose of alleviating some of the situations for the community and also for our judiciary, which is so overwhelmed by many, many cases. So we hope that you'll send what has been requested by Honorable Williams so that we can look at it. Thank you very much for your presentation. Honorable members, our other meeting, next meeting will be on Friday, where we'll be considering budget, the BRRRR, in preparation for the presentation in Parliament. It's on Friday, at starting from 9:30 to 10:30. So, thank you very much, Honorable Members, for your cooperation, and thank you very much, Members of the
signal. We hope to see you again as we'll be moving. Thank you very much. Meetings are adjourned.